I like to eat an uncooked oyster. Nothing's slicker, nothing's moister. Nothing's easier on your gorge or when the time comes to discharge. But not to let it too long rest within your mouth is always best. For if your mind dwells on an oyster, nothing's slicker, nothing's moister. I prefer my oyster fried. Then I'm sure my oysters died.
Writer Roy Blunt Jr. He's here to talk about his new book of Southern humor, a collection of good laughter and wit from below the Mason-Dixon line. Welcome to Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Partial support for Soundings comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Roy Blunt Jr. is a son of the South and one of America's funniest writers. For his latest book, he turned to his native region to assemble a collection of pieces that amounts to a definitive treasury of Southern humor for our time. Featuring dozens of selections by more than 100 contributors who range from William Faulkner, Molly Ivins, and Zora Neale Hurston to Joel Chandler Harris and Little Richard, Roy Blunt's book of Southern humor presents an overview of the Southern comic impulse. Among the subjects of the book is religion in the South. I asked Roy Blunt Jr. to talk about infant baptism.
Well, it seems to me that there's a Southern koan, you know, like as in Zen koans, K-O-A-N, that is the story about the old boy who was asked if he believed in infant baptism. And he said, "Believe in it? Hell, I've seen it done." Seems to me to cover lots of theological questions.
Now, why is that representative of Southern humor?
Well, I think that it's representative of Southern thinking, which is not to be too analytical or too abstract, but to actually get out there and see things and listen to how people talk and tell stories and, you know, and not reflect too much or even enough.
Yeah, metaphysical is a word that you don't like much. Am I right?
Well, I don't know that I dislike it, but, I mean, I think that... Southerners tend to distrust the metaphysical. I mean, there's a piece in here in my book by Melissa Fay Green, an excerpt from her book called Praying for Sheetrock, another example of concrete theology, Praying for Sheetrock, in which she says that the elderly black population of McIntosh County, Georgia, would not be surprised at all if Christ came down to earth. He would just, they would say, "Gertie, the angel of the Lord is here." You know, and there's something that sort of concreteness can lead to bizarre politics and one thing and another, but it is sort of good for humor.
Yeah. Now, one of the words that you warn us away from, Roy Blunt, is phenomenological. Southerners
well,
live in the moment,
as you're just saying. Well, here. Maybe not this moment, but they live in some moment that they remember. And, well, I just think that it's a, you know, Wallace Stevens, one of Wallace Stevens' poems, he says, "The saddest thing is not to live in a physical world." And whatever else you can say about the South, it tends to be a physical world.
Now, you have picked the selections in your book of Southern humor. They revolve around a single word here, and that word is delight. Things that you really enjoyed yourself. Tell me about
that.
Sure,
yeah. Well, I've been reading Southern humor all my life, and then W.W. Norton Company asked me to edit the Norton Book of Southern Humor.
Uh-huh.
And then they decided to call it Roy Blunt's Book of Southern Humor, which I find far less distinguished sounding, but I suppose it's more concrete since Norton himself is no longer around. And but, you know, there's The Wife of Bath says at one point, "It tickleth me about my heart's core," something or other.
So that's what you were looking for.
Yeah, looking for things that tickle me. And they can be kind of grim things, but if they turn in just the right way, they can be tickling. I think that Southern humor deals with a lot darker and crazier stuff than the sort of standard New Yorker tradition of Benchley and Thurber and Perlman and E.B. White, which is what people have thought of. When you think of American humor, you think of those old New Yorker guys who wrote short, tight essays and tended to be mostly about sort of the trials of a neurotic white man. But the trials of Southerners of all stripes are actually much more much less orderly, but much more interesting, I think.
And, well, let's come back to some of those in a few minutes, Roy Blunt. But right now, tell me how you organized this book. You talk about the Confederacy plus Kentucky. You wanted stuff that was funny without pictures, and you wanted variety. How'd you make your choices?
Well, I just went for things that I liked, and I wanted to make it. I think that people tend to think of Southern humor as something corny and redneck, out of Hee Haw with Junior Samples sitting on a bale of hay and talking about pigs, which can be funny. I like Junior Samples, and I think pigs are funny, but there's lots more. There's Louis Armstrong reminiscing, and there's Little Richard talking about how he wrote Tutti Frutti, and there's Faulkner and Flannery O'Connor and Eudora Welty, and as a matter of fact, some of the bedrock of American, not just Southern culture, but American culture is just rife with Southern humor.
Now, you run from B.B. King to, let me see, who's your first writer? That's B.B. King, and then you end with Jerry Clower, and you got about 115 writers in between there. Yeah. What were you looking for? Were you looking for racial themes and food themes and religion and, what was it that tickled you?
I was looking for funny stuff, but, and I don't even think I had to look for racial themes, people in the South, I think that there's somehow a notion that because the most broadly broadcast Southern humor is just sort of tacky redneck stuff. You know, it's Beverly Hills people.
Right.
But in fact, there have been all sorts of black and white writers writing about real problems and writing about race and politics and God and all kinds of things that are too embarrassing to put on television.
You get one exchange in here between Robert Penn Warren and a writer whose name is Sterling Brown, and there's some pretty harsh language. There's some racial epithets that get thrown back and forth, and yet you think of this as the basis for a humorous take on life in the South. Tell me about that.
Well, I thought about doing I literally thought that I would leave the N-word out of this book, but I found that if I did that, I would leave out a whole lot of good stuff that's worth reading. Certainly a whole lot of black writers say nigger from time to time, and even occasionally, white writers quote white people as saying it. And I think that if you leave out you're referring to the fact that Robert Penn Warren said in a poem, a line of one of his poems was, "Nigger, your breed ain't metaphysical."
And what is not what a, does Sterling not Brown criticism. Say in return to
and
that?
Sterling A. Brown, who's a wonderful poet and scholar and black teacher at Howard University, and who's also included in my book, he wrote some wonderful light verse and sort of bluesy verse. At any rate, he responded to Robert Penn Warren, "Cracker, your breed ain't exegetical."
Now, what about this word cracker? Is that as bad to a white person in the South as the N-word is to a black person in the South?
Well, there aren't any equivalents in language.
You wrote
life.
A book that has that word in
I
the title.
I wrote a book called Crackers. People tend to throw around the words redneck and crackers and peckerwood loosely. And white Southerners have tended not to form anti-defamation leagues. It's an interesting question, which I have explored at some depth, why Southerners don't get touchy in the way that other white Southerners don't, even black Southerners actually, don't get touchy in the same way that other ethnic groups do. And I've posited that what white Southerners do is just get revenge on the North by selling really stupid souvenirs that people take home and put in their houses. And I don't know. I there's some kind of, what you're supposed to do, if you're insulted in the South, you're not supposed to, say that's not fair to say. Both black and white people just insult back and maybe get in a fight. That's one reason that Southern humor has flourished so and has also gotten into some awfully deep and difficult areas is that people in the South, at least traditionally, have tended to hit each other rather than jaw at each other as they might in the Northeast.
Well, now again, you have warned us away from the metaphysics of Southern humor. I think we can underscore that by telling our listeners about the picture on the front of this book, Roy Blunt's Book of Southern Humor. You're sitting in a rocker. There's a stuffed alligator there next to you. You're reading a book called 100 Ways to Defeat Satan. And on the cap that you're wearing, what does that say?
It says, "To hell with how they do it in New York."
Now, you don't really feel that way, do you?
No. I do when I live in New York, but yeah, I feel that way about the way they do everything. I tend not to like the way anybody, once ways get sort of settled, I think it's healthy to start saying to hell with it. And I think that's a Southern tradition to say, you know, just not care and just say, well, the hell with this. I ain't going to do this. I like New York, but I also admire the spirit of that hat. I mean, people in New York certainly are as dismissive of people in the South as people in the South are of people in New York. I mean, but on the other hand, a strange thing to me is when people in the South say, what are people like in the North? Because there isn't any North. I mean, North is just spread all over the North. All North is a direction out of the South.
Now, are Southerners just sort of intrinsically, inherently humorous, Roy Blunt? You say, for example, that in L.A., you live a motorized life. In New York, you lead an argumentative life. In the South, you lead a humorous life.
Well, that's not exactly what I said. I said that it's as necessary to be humorous in the South as it is to be motorized in L.A. or argumentative in New York.
Fair enough.
Because, you know, it's just part, I think, of Southern discourse to be funny, which is not always the case. I mean, people in New York are funny. I'm not saying that, but it's funny in a different way. And, you know, I just think you're in trouble if you're in the South and can't take a joke and can't give a joke.
Now, part of this goes to the Southern love of language. The words, you almost taste them. You roll them around in your mouth. How about this?
I've been reading a book about elephants recently and how elephants communicate. And they sniff each other's feet and they put each other's trunks in each other's mouths and they make little putt-putt-putt noises and things. And I was sort of chuckling at that. And it occurred to me that if an elephant ever, and I assume they do, look at people and consider the way they communicate, they would say they don't even smell each other's feet. And they may, at any rate, the ways anybody communicates are funny and strange. And we flap our teeth and lips together and move this bizarre looking organ called the tongue around in our mouth. And that's how we communicate. And I think Southerners have a physical sense of that and a sense of the comedy of language that comes out in the way that they enjoy expressions and use them and apply them to, you know, and incorporate strange animals into figures of speech.
What about religion? You say that religion, so many of the selections in your book of Southern humor go to belief, disbelief, theology. How about that? Is there something special about religion in the South that's funny?
Well, I think religion, Southern religion, is distinctive in the same way that Southern food is, maybe. I mean, it tends to be kind of simple, and it tends to be kind of hearty, and it tends to be kind of tasty in certain ways.
Deep fried, huh?
Deep fried, yeah, but also barbecued in one thing and another, and cooked with a whole lot of bacon sometimes. But I think that religion in the South is less, I don't know, it's more, I mean, I'm not religious myself anywhere anymore, but I was raised to be religious. And when I started going to churches, probably what I lost my religion because I went up to the Northeast and tried church up there. And I was just astonished. It's like an elephant watching a person talk. I thought, is this what they call church? I mean, they're not singing. They're just all these dry people standing up talking about pollution. They're talking about water pollution. Now, you don't talk about water pollution in the church. You talk about the blood of the lamb. I ain't going to go to this kind of church. And, you know, it's just seemed to me that blood of the lamb is a lot more religious.
Well, here we get back to that concrete experience of what you call phenomenology. What about nature? You say that Southerners have a lot to look at themselves and laugh at and be laughed at because of their relationship to things like crickets and fish and worms. And they're just somehow, a more palpable kind of thing going on here?
Yeah, there's in my book, I have an excerpt from a novel by Clyde Edgerton called Rainy, which is just a long account of how the whole family discussed and finally managed to extricate from the nose of the little kid a hook, the fish hook, which had gotten in his nose and which still had a worm on it. So
yeah,
he had a worm and a hook in his nose. And it seems to me that things happen like that frequently in the South. I don't suppose there are any more insects, bugs, and worms in the South than there are anywhere else. They probably are, for one thing.
Clyde's also got a passage in one of his books about vegetarians, and in Rainy, is it? I mean, what is this? This sort of insider-outsider, and you're doing weird things that we don't know about? One lady says, well, I'm having the vegetable plate, and everybody stops and looks at her like, you are?
Mm-hmm.
What about that? Is that particularly Southern?
What, to look askance at vegetarianism?
Sure, sure.
I should think so, because it seems like such an abstract thing to do. I mean, I think people in the South assume that everybody likes meat. I mean, maybe you might have some kind of principle that keeps you from eating meat, or maybe later you feel kind of logy when you eat meat, but people in the South feel logy a lot. And, you know, meat's good. I think that's, you know, animals eat meat. We're carnivores. And therefore, if you stop eating meat, I'm not against it. I like vegetables myself. But the traditional Southern reaction would be he's giving up meat. That's like giving up, I don't know, kissing or something.
Let's come back to your book of some of the selections in your book of Southern humor, Roy Blunt, and politics. And here's a kind of a serious note, and that is to say violence in the South. Is there some sort of necessary connection there between Southern humor and political life and the humor that we find in it?
Well, Southern politics have been full of sometimes violent, certainly traumatic contradictions, clashes between black people and white people and northern people and southern people and progressive people and regressive people. And the clashes have tended historically to be much more upfront, I think, and more dramatic in the South than in the North. And that leads, on the one hand, to dismaying occurrences and bad customs and so on and so forth. But one thing, that sort of dramatic, those dramatic clashes and conflicts lead to dramatic and humor. So that
is there anything funny, for example, about somebody like David Duke or Bull Connor, characters like that? George Wallace, for example.
Well, I have a story. I can't think. It seems to me, you know, I am a Yellow Dog Democrat because I was raised to believe when I was growing up, a white person in the South, about the only respectable thing I was a Democrat.
Now, what we should tell our listeners that a Yellow Dog Democrat is somebody who votes a straight ticket.
Yellow Dog Democrat will vote for a yellow dog if he's running against a Republican or if she's running against a Republican.
Fair enough.
The dog doesn't have to be a male dog. So it seems to me that once Southern politicians became Republicans, they lost a little something, a little earthiness. And I haven't noted anything attractive or earthy about David Duke. And Bull Connor, I don't know. Bull Connor may have told some funny stories, but once you get known for sicking police dogs on people, it's a little. I don't care whether you're funny or not. I don't want you in my book. However, I do have. I mean, I mentioned Bull Connor in my book, but I do actually have a story that George Wallace told. Now, George Wallace was a mean person in many ways, and I've interviewed George Wallace and tried to ask him questions when I was a Southern newspaper man, and he made fun of all us Southern newspaper men, of course. So I don't naturally take to him at all, but he did have a real populist streak, and he also had a real sense of political reality. There's a story which takes a little while to tell, but it's in my book, that he was urged to come out for an amendment that would raise a new school tax, because everybody said, if we don't pass this tax, the little school children will suffer. Everybody kept telling him that and then people kept doing public service ads on the television saying, we must pass this tax or the little school children will suffer. And finally, George Wallace, talking to his people, said, listen, I ain't coming out for that amendment, that school tax, because I tell you what, the voter is going to do. The voter is going to come home from working 8 hours in the hot sun, and he's mad as hell, and he's sitting there in front of the television with a beer in one hand and a bologna sandwich in the other, and some three-piece suited educator is going to come on the television and say, we have got to pass this new tax or the little school children will suffer. And you know what that voter's going to say? I'm slightly euphemizing this. He's going to say, screw the little school children.
Oh, my goodness. Now, why is that? I'm going to ask you to get analytical on me here a minute, Roy. How about this?
Well, I think that's funny, but just because it's sort of a taboo to anybody, you know, and people get, whenever anybody gets pious about things and things become a sort of cliche and anything is a target for humor once it gets said too many times and people just start saying it automatically and people are ignoring the realities involved. Now, I would, of course, voted for the school tax myself, but that's because I'm, you know, a sort of three-piece suit-minded person.
Well, now, one of the things you put your finger on here is the contradictions that are inherent in Southern humor. One of the writers that you include in your book of Southern humor is a man named Joe Mitchell, who is the quintessential New Yorker writer, and yet here's a guy who is very much a Southerner. I take it you don't see this as a contradiction.
Oh, sure. I see everything as a contradiction. I don't think anything's interesting unless it's contradictory. I mean, yin and yang and... Everything's a combination of things, and I think people, you know, Southern culture is basically a combination of black and white, for one thing, and yet it's not gray, which makes for lots of juicy eruptions. And Joseph Mitchell, went up to New York back in the 30s, I guess, and became and wrote some of the best reporting pieces that were ever written for the New Yorker. However, when the less oral the New Yorker got, the less Joe Mitchell wrote. I mean, under William Shawn, who turned the magazine into a much more literary magazine, Joe Mitchell didn't write much.
He's also a guy who, writing to his daughter, he says, look, you know, for crying out loud, all I'm doing is writing stories to entertain people, and I'm not trying to create literature with a capital L.
Right.
And because it has a sort of Southern flavor to it, doesn't necessarily make it enduring literature. Now, is that part of this contradiction that goes to what you think is funny in the South?
Well, I don't think anybody writes literature that lasts very long by setting out to write literature. I mean, Mark Twain didn't set out to write literature. Well, he probably did, actually. But the more he set out to write literature, the less fun it got. And, that's just sort of poor mouthing. I mean, Joe Mitchell knows that he's a real good writer and that he wrote stuff that's going to last. But, of course, he's going to say, my gracious, what he said was on NPR, he said, can you imagine what a mess I would have made if I'd set out to write literature? You know, I was just trying to write funny articles for a magazine.
Now, there's another Southern writer, a man named H.L. Mencken, who was a Southerner.
well, he wasn't really. He was a Baltimorean.
Well, you know, now some people argue that that's a border state that belongs in the South. Now, how about Mencken?
Mencken was certainly not a Southerner. He hated the South, but he wrote so negatively about the South with such relish that I think he did the South great honor. His writing inspired a lot of Southern writers like Richard Wright and somebody else. First started writing when they read Mencken. And I mean, the great thing about the South is that if you attack it with feeling, it makes for a great Southern literature.
Well, now, what I'm leading you to here, Roy Blunt, is the South is the sort of a humorous whipping boy for the country. In other words, when something really weird happens, we look kind of like the characters in Flannery O'Connor, and we say, there's another grotesque, there's another one of these weirdos from the South. Is that what the South stands for in the sort of humor of a North American culture?
Well, you know, if it's written from the outside, and not that everybody doesn't have a right to write about the South from the outside, but anybody who dismisses something as just silly is not doing that thing justice. I mean, even silly things deserve, good writing doesn't just dismiss things as, I don't know, I can't state that as a general principle either. But at any rate, a lot of bad comedy, like the Beverly Hillbillies, consists of making fun of the weirdos in
the music of Spike Jones. I mean, you know, there's a guy who was an accomplished musician.
People did have, even some funny people have blithely made fun of the South, and there you go. I mean, funny people have blithely made fun of women, too, and women don't like it. And I don't like it when I'm a Southerner, but I can concede something. I like Spike Jones pretty much. But it does irritate me when people assume that it's okay to make fun of the South, even when they're talking to me, and I will snap back at them, in fact, because I know how funny the South is, and if we're sort of talking on the same level, and if we're talking about human beings together, but what really irritates me is like the movie Mississippi Burning, which starts out good, and there's some good local stuff, but then suddenly you see that it's just gradually turning Southern white people into animals. And also turning Southern black people into just sort of whipping boys.
You say that the South is not a special category of human existence.
Right.
Do you find yourself defending the South, explaining the South? Humorously?
I think that Southerners don't like to defend and explain. I mean, we like to attack and celebrate. Like everybody else, I guess. But so I prefer to attack and celebrate, but it's hard not to be defensive when people, I mean, when I was writing, when I was doing this book, people said, so I was doing a book of Southern humor, and they said, well, people in New York said, is it going to be thin? I didn't like that.
Here's a final question for you, Roy Blunt Jr. Why are you not a humor consultant?
Because I just don't have my eye on the main chance. I prefer to go out there and dig up stuff that I love and share it with other people.
Well, Roy, let's conclude on this note. I want to hear your song to oysters. How about this?
That's right. Southern humor tends to be oral, and it tends to be about animals, and it tends to be about eating. So here's a song to oysters. It puts the whole thing in an oyster shell. I like to eat an uncooked oyster. Nothing's slicker. Nothing's moister. Nothing's easier on your gorge or when the time comes to discharge. But not to let it too long rest within your mouth is always best. For if your mind dwells on an oyster, nothing's slicker. Nothing's moister. I prefer my oyster fried. Then I'm sure my oysters died.
Roy Blunt, Jr., thanks so much for being by the National Humanities Center. Your book is the Roy Blunt's Book of Southern Humor. It's available from Norton. Good luck in your work.
Thank you, Wayne.
Roy Blunt, Jr. is the editor of The Book of Southern Humor, available from W.W. Norton. Roy Blunt, Jr. is also the author of About Three Bricks Shy, Crackers, and What Men Don't Tell Women. This is Soundings from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. In just a moment, information about where to write for an audio cassette of this program. You're listening to Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. My guest this week was writer Roy Blunt, Jr. Audio tapes of this program are available for $10 postpaid. Our address is Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 764. That's program number 764. Our address again is Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. We're interested in your comments and suggestions. Our email address is sounding, S-O-U-N-D-I-N-G, at uncecs.edu. Next week on Soundings, Recovering American Literature. My guest will be literary critic Peter Shaw. Until next week's show, thanks for listening to Soundings. Partial support for this program comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Our theme music is by Jeff Perry. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center. Roy Blunt's Book of Southern Humor, this week on Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me for a conversation with humorist Roy Blunt, Jr. His new collection surveys what he calls the richest vein of American humor, the broadest, the earthiest, and the most inventive, a comic impulse that includes native storytelling and ranges from the sacred to the profane. Roy Blunt's Book of Southern Humor, Readings and Conversation, this week on Soundings.